Good afternoon. I hope everyone's enjoying their lunch. We are finally to the most exciting part of our program. We're going to hear from Mayor Brandon Johnson, who's going to introduce our housing commissioner, Commissioner Lisette Castaneda. Now, in advance of this, I'd had a chance to get to know Commissioner Castaneda a little bit in talking to her, as well as her profile. And this is a woman who has done amazing things for housing through the nonprofit lens, starting initially counseling folks with a nonprofit to help them be able to access mortgages and affordable housing, all the way to setting policy. So this is somebody who's seen it end-to-end across nonprofits and governmental units. So a lot of exciting things that we're going to have in our conversation. And I'll just reflect, this past summer, City Club had hosted a salon series in conjunction with the DNC. And I had a chance to talk to a number of mayors and other senior officials. And I would always ask them, what's your top policy priority? Any guesses? Housing. Coast to coast, big cities, small cities, new cities, old, large and small. And so with that, I'd like to introduce Mayor Brandon Johnson, and we'll get to the program. Thank you.
Hello, City Club. It is my great honor to introduce a leader whose life and work reflect the very values we are uplifting across our city, our Chicago Department of Housing Commissioner, Lisette Castaneda. Commissioner Castaneda's story is deeply personal, yet it is a story shared by many Chicagoans. Her father worked in hotels and supported his family with union wages. Her mother dedicated herself to raising their three children. Her family lived in Lincoln Park, but over time, gentrification made it increasingly difficult for families like the Castanedas to stay. Like so many other families in Chicago, hers was pushed out and displaced by rising costs. They moved to the West Side and found a home that provided stability and security for everyone. This home was the foundation that her family needed to thrive. And we can see the proof that Commissioner Castaneda certainly thrives today. I share Commissioner Castaneda's story because it demonstrates that housing is not just about having a roof over your head. Housing is about building generational wealth, creating permanency, and having the ability to stay in the neighborhood where you have planted roots. Commissioner Castaneda says that she never intended to end up in the housing work. It was her life experiences that led her there. In over 20 years of dedicated service, she has become one of our city's most respected advocates for affordable housing and transformative investments. Before becoming our DOH commissioner, she was board president to Palenque LSNA, and she led Lucha, one of Chicago's leading affordable housing organizations. She brings experience in community organizing, activism, and fighting for justice to our Department of Housing. Her leadership has helped the city to advance transformative projects and policies. Just this month, we made history when the City Council passed the Green Social Housing Ordinance, making Chicago the first major city in the country to implement this innovative model. Commissioner Castaneda is at the forefront of our work, advocating for policies that prioritize environmental sustainability and economic equity, ensuring that every new development benefits the community it serves. And through her leadership, we are seeing ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings across the city. And we are cutting the tape on long-standing bureaucratic hurdles to advance projects that transform our city. Together, we have accomplished so much, and there's still more to do. I look forward to seeing Commissioner Castaneda's further impact on our city. And I am thrilled that you will hear more from her today about our progress. So please join me in welcoming the Chicago Department of Housing Commissioner, Lisette Castaneda.
Good afternoon. No idea what time it is, y'all. I've been up since pretty early. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. To set the stage a little bit for my conversation with Omar, I want to talk about what the department has been doing. We're going to talk about our bold new efforts, and yes, we're going to talk about green social housing. So let's start with a little bit of history. Context matters, and we can't talk about how we've ended up here without talking about where we've come from. We have to recognize that Chicago has been a place where historically we have faced systemic issues like redlining, gentrification, and as a response, affordable housing efforts began to take shape. In 1937, the Chicago Housing Authority was established. And the Department of Housing, as it is today, was reestablished in 2019. So today we get to work under Mayor Brandon Johnson to continue to collaborate with the Department of Planning and Development and others to solve our housing challenges. So what are we looking at? What are the challenges today? So part of what you can see here is a heat map. Thank you again to our friends at CHA for our help on this. And what you can see here is the most recent data on the lack of affordability. The map on the left, you can see very low income households in the middle, very low income households in the middle, very low income, and in the right, extremely low income households. So basically, as you can see, as the neighborhoods are changing, fewer of them are affordable. You can see that in the spread of yellow. The United States is experiencing a national housing crisis. This is not a crisis unique to Chicago. It is not a crisis necessarily of Chicago's doing. This is a national crisis that we are facing. And it is marked by a shortage of affordable homes, rising costs, and growing homelessness. Both renters and homeowners are affected, with many unable to find or have or afford suitable housing. Contributing factors are things like new construction, increasing development costs, and restrictive zoning regulations. In Chicago, there are at least 119,000 fewer affordable apartments than there are families in need. The shortage of affordable homes and rising costs, again, a national crisis. In Chicago, over 51% of families are rent burdened. They spend more than 30% of their income on rent or utilities. And something has to change. And that's the work that we are doing. The Department of Housing's mission is to develop quality, affordable, safe, and healthy housing for all Chicagoans, no matter age or background. The big way that I think about this and the way that I always talk about it is about choice. We want every single family in the city of Chicago to be able to make the best choice for themselves and their families. They should not be restricted by lack of access to amenities. They should not be restricted by lack of access to transportation, to health care, to other things that make housing a true home. So we do this work through three main pillars: repopulation, wealth building, housing desegregation, homelessness prevention, and tenant protections. Since 2023, a total of 3,943 affordable housing units have been completed through new construction, rehabilitation, or preservation. As of March of 2025, the Department of Housing had a total of 1,821 units under construction, either being built, new construction, or rehabbed. And at last check, we have 4,622 units in our development pipeline and are expected to move forward in the next 18 months. These units are part of projects that are in various stages of planning, financing, approval, and are awaiting the start of construction. So let's share a few of our key initiatives, both within the department and in collaboration with others. Some of you, I see some familiar faces from this morning, came from our one-year anniversary of Cut the Tape. Cut the Tape is helping to improve the processes. A lot of our work is coming through that umbrella of Cut the Tape. If you don't know, in 2024, Mayor Brandon Johnson launched the Cut the Tape initiative to streamline housing and commercial development processes. We are already making some great progress. out of the Department of Housing, the biggest leap of progress that we will see will be a new and updated architectural and technical standards manual. That is something that I know everyone wants to see us update, and it will be a really incredible down payment on the work that we have been doing of listening and taking feedback and doing that very seriously. The other piece of the work that we have already begun to launch as part of this has been our updated qualified allocation plan. Many of you know that this is the framework by which we award low-income housing tax credits. Last month, we released our updated draft plan, and in that plan, what you saw was that we added a preliminary application stage to our developments. Part of what we heard from developers was that it was a lot of work to put together a full application, time, money, effort, and sometimes it came to nothing. Certainly in 2023, during our last application round, we had about a 3-to-1 ratio of applications we received versus applications we were able to fund. By adding this preliminary application phase, we are able to give a faster look at developments and determine whether or not it is something that should move forward at this stage. We know that that will be something that will be very valuable to our development partners. Cut the Tape is part of our broader economic development strategy. It's supporting the growth through the Housing and Economic Development Bond and aligns with citywide plans. You will see this through other things like our LaSalle Street Corridor revitalization. The very first picture that was up for a while was from our first groundbreaking of a rehab building at 79 West Monroe. And so we are working with the Department of Planning and Development to convert unused office spaces into residential units. 30% of them affordable, and that was the first one to break ground. We also have other projects we've been working on and are really excited to move forward. We also just did a topping off ceremony for Thrive Exchange, which is a notable investment in South Shore and the 79th Street Corridor, as well as a ribbon cutting for Auburn Gresham Apartments, which is another investment on the south side. It's complete with amenities like balconies and commercial space on the first floor. Looking forward, we are preparing for challenges and opportunities that are on the horizon. We cannot talk about the current state of housing, particularly affordable housing, without talking about our concerns around the federal landscape. Affordable housing funding often hinges on federal support. National budget cuts that have been proposed to programs like HOME and CDBG would impact our ability to continue to deliver affordable housing significantly. Federal support remains essential for affordable housing development. We do know, and I see some of our partners in the room who have been ensuring that the low-income housing tax credit is renewed and expanded. That is also really great and important work. And we just want to ensure that other sources like HOME and CDBG are also being renewed. So the next thing, the most exciting thing, the thing that I have spent a lot of time talking about recently, has been green social housing. Just this month, earlier this month, Chicago passed this groundbreaking initiative. This innovative but proven model blends sustainability with affordability and local funding. Green social housing will be wholly funded out of Mayor Johnson's Housing and Economic Development Bond. It was one of two specifically named programs when the bond was passed last year. This will ensure that we are able to have development that is up to green building standards, that has tenant governance, it has forms of rent stabilization, and 30 to 40% of affordable units. We are growing the pie. It is another tool in the toolbox. When we look at the shortage of what is happening across the country, we know that there is not a single tool that will solve all the problems. Green social housing gets us one step closer. It gets us another tool in the toolbox as we work to address that issue here in Chicago. Green social housing will allow for more housing production beyond what can be provided by LIHTC alone and will be a mix of affordable and market rate units. At the end of the day, I'm certainly driven by the why. You all heard Mayor Johnson talk a little bit about my own background and why I'm so passionate about housing. I've been doing this work for a very long time, and at the end of the day, I know that it's going to take all of us. It is going to take passion from all corners of the city, from the business community, the civic community, from philanthropy, and from other partners in government to resolve our housing crisis. Housing is more than just shelter. It's dignity. It is stability. It is opportunity. When people are housed, they are able to move on to do the other things in life that they want to do. We are not that far past the beginning of COVID-19, where we were all reminded that you cannot shelter in place without a home. And days like every day, frankly, at the Department of Housing are why we keep doing this work, because we know that everyone deserves to have that. And at the end of the day, the vision that we keep going towards is that every single Chicagoan has a place to live of their own choosing. Thank you.
Commissioner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your comments. And one of the things that you had said earlier on, this does take all of us. And I agree. And so I'm delighted to see all of you here today to be a part of this conversation. I also wanted to thank Chicago Housing Authority. Please give them a round of applause. Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives. Illinois Realtors, World Business Chicago, and Bally Chicago. So now, Commissioner, I got a chance to look at all the things you've done in housing, and one of the things that I felt was, wow, you are all in on housing, and we agree it's something that everyone cares about. How did you first get interested in that? What was the spark when you were studying or in your life?
Yeah, I was really fortunate to have been someone who was able to get involved in local activities, and particularly in Logan Square, a longtime powerhouse is now known as Palenque Alicine, was the Logan Square Neighborhood Association back then. And as a teenager, I got involved with them and the work that they were doing. And that was where I first learned the word gentrification. As I talked about my own story, they're like, okay, yeah, you were displaced from your community. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I just know that my parents had to drive further west, had to drive away from the community we had known and we had grown up in order to find a place that they could afford to buy. And so really that's where it started. I worked on, I was a leader on the original balanced development campaign. I don't know if anyone here remembers this, but the original balanced development campaign was what led to what was then called set asides. And today we call the Affordable Requirements Ordinance, which is part of the charge of the Department of Housing. So it's really, it's been a long journey that kind of has all led full circle here.
No, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Having worked initially counseling individuals in terms of how they can access affordable housing all the way to setting policy, it gives you great context to see how it fits together. If we look further back in housing policy history, you know, back to the early 1900s, it was actually initially nonprofits in Chicago that had started the affordable housing movement. You could look at Jane Addams and the Whole House movement as a progenitor of much of the 1937 Housing Act. How do you see, given the changes happening in D.C., how do you see those changing with respect to how local communities respond to housing challenges?
Yeah, I think the example you gave is a spot-on example, right, where we have, particularly in Chicago, this really long, great, rich history of having people step up for their communities. You know, I most recently was working in Humboldt Park, and a lot of the feeling and the notion, particularly after the pandemic, was we've got us. And so very much that idea that as community, we have to remember that we have to get us.
Right.
We have to be the ones to come together to solve crises. Also because we should have a say, because community should have a say in the things that are happening, because folks with lived experience should be the ones helping to address policy issues for what they are facing. And so I think that community at large, right, whether it's the business community, the civic community, nonprofits, everyone has a really important role to play.
I couldn't agree more. And that brings us to the green social housing, which is, I was sharing earlier before we came on, I was in New York last week talking with people that work in the housing space, and people are very, everybody's watching in the country to see how we do it. What were some of your lessons learned in sort of assembling that, and what would you share with other communities that want to replicate that?
So one of the things that we were really fortunate is that we had a funding source for green social housing. Mm-hmm. I know that when I first got to the department and talked to folks from other cities, a lot of the frustration was that there was energy behind it, but no idea how they could fund right. it. And so for us to have the Housing and Economic Development Bond has been just an incredible, incredible tool for us to be able to further the development of affordable housing, including for green social housing. And so we've been again, just really excited by that. And I think that if anyone else is thinking about tackling this, I think working side by side and hand in hand with folks to ensure that there is funding and that there is the legislative will to get it done is ultimately how it'll happen.
Well, that's great advice. And I know talking with a lot of folks around the country, they're looking for solutions. As we referenced earlier in the program, We spoke with at City Club the mayor of San Diego, and he said housing was so severe there that as mayor he couldn't afford to buy a home in San Diego. Mm. And so people are looking for these tools everywhere they go. But we do see the legislative will here. If you look at Mayor Brandon Johnson, he's put a lot of weight behind cut the red tape, and I could attest firsthand. I serve on the governing board of Chicago Children's Advocacy Center, and we have our own development needs there. And in that capacity, I've seen the benefit of cut the red tape. It's really making things a lot better. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on there and sort of the progress that's been made and other things that you want to see happen in that initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. So Cut the Tape is really a cornerstone initiative for us at this point. As a department, we have established a Bureau of Implementation and Evaluation, which means that we're not saying that just for this initiative we're doing this work. We are fundamentally doing culture shifts within the department to ensure that this is work that can continue. It also means that it's work that we're taking seriously, not just in the development space, but also across all of our programs and across all of the ways, all the work that the Department of Housing is charged with. In addition, I would say that I think we're already starting to see some benefits. One of the developers said to me this morning that the project they have closing this year will have closed the fastest of any project that they have worked on in recent memory. And they have dozens of projects in the city of Chicago.
Can we give Commissioner Castaneda? Commissioner and Mayor, that's definitely worthy of a round of applause, because I know how big of a step that is, because, like you said, housing requires all of us in the room to make it happen.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Thank you for that. Thank you for your leadership in that. Talking about all of us in the room, one of the things we often like to do at City Club is have everybody walk away with what next and what can they do. And so if you are a citizen in our city, in our community, what are some of the things that people can do to help promulgate good housing policy and help make more affordable housing there? We have a gap of 119 units is the number, 119,000 units, excuse me. Of course, you said there's different tools that are going to reach that. What are some of the things that we can all do to help close that gap?
So more than anything, I think part of what we have really benefited from have been some good, hard conversations on the things that we need to improve on. I know that the staff has sat through some very, very difficult conversations, but at the end of the day, the takeaway is really about how do we improve this? How do we improve this for developers so that we can all get to the ultimate goal of housing more Chicagoans? So I think the number one thing I would say is continue to be in dialogue with us. I know know that some days it can feel like we are not accessible, but please know that our goal is always to get feedback, is always to hear back from folks, and is always to know from others what's working and what isn't so that we can continue to improve. In addition to that, I would say talk to elected officials at every level, local, state, federal, and talk about how important affordable housing is and the development of housing is in general. All of these folks have a role to play. We could not have passed green social housing without having our legislative partners on board. And whatever is happening at the federal level will also require our federal elected officials to be on board and understand the importance of this and the advocacy that needs to be done. And really the best folks to do that are all of you.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. And I know being at City Club over the years that so many people come here because they want to make that change. So I look forward to all that. If we're to look sort of beyond Chicago now and look at, you mentioned, you know, green social housing is an important tool in the box, and that's a great win. What are some of the other things that you look out across the country or even globally and say, gee, that's an interesting initiative?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so green social housing itself did come from looking at what's happening globally. You know, the best example of green social housing is in Vienna. And this is, the United States is just beginning to dip its toe into this. And so we're really excited to be at the forefront. We are the largest city to have brought this model in. In addition to that, there's other things that I know that we've been looking at nationally that continue to be important to the administration, including ADUs. That is part of what is one of the recommendations that we are putting forth. Is how do we move forward on expanding accessory dwelling units across the city? We know that that could be a phenomenal tool for helping getting folks housed, legalizing units that have already been used as ADUs, and just generally having more supply.
ADUs are, I'm glad you brought that up because it's one of the things that you read so much about, and people are very passionate about on both sides. What would you say to somebody who has questions or concerns about ADUs relative to the policy implications?
Yeah, I think part of what we saw in the pilot areas, and so about a year ago, we published a report that had the results of our 3-year study. And part of what we saw in the pilot areas was that it wasn't an overwhelming number of ADUs that ever popped up on a single block. The average really was like basically one for any block that did it. And so we really want to just remind folks that it isn't that everyone's going to go out and do this and wildly change the character of the neighborhood or the block. This is just, again, another tool in the toolbox for those who want to avail themselves of it.
That's fantastic. And, you know, if you think about Sears and our model houses that we built here long ago, where you got a kit house and you could build it, people have talked about that in the context of ADUs, that, you know, they could be modularized and sort of standardized. What do you think of that? Do you think it ought to be sort of custom, or do you think there are ways that it could be modularized and perhaps more efficient?
I think there's lots of ways to find efficiencies that still address the character of the neighborhood, the character of a home, and what the community at large wants to mm-hmm. see. So I think there's a good balance between both.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we've touched on a lot of things. I always want to try to get to all of the questions, and I know we had a number of audience questions too. But before we close, what's sort of on the horizon? What is the next thing that you really sort of wake up every morning excited about for Chicago's housing?
Yeah, so despite how much time and energy we have expended on green social housing up to this point, that was just the starting line. We have authorization through the ordinance to establish the independent 501c3, the Residential Investment Corporation. And so now next comes filling up the board and filling the committees like the Sustainability Committee and other advisory committees, and then actually getting a project with shovels in the ground and to actually get moving and moving folks in. And so we're still really excited about that, and there's still a lot of work to be done there.
No, that's exciting. And, you know, a lot of good things coming for our city in the coming weeks and months. And, of course, you know, we have a nice summer plan, too. So, yeah. Commissioner, thank you so much for that conversation. We'd love to now open it up to questions from members of our City Club audience. So with that, I'd like to ask if there are questions.
They're all shy.
This is actually, oh, okay, fantastic. And we will have, in just a moment, let me get the mic. I'll be right there. And if you would, please introduce yourself and your organization and state your question. Thank you.
Sure. I'm Steve Ford with Marquette Bank. To a layperson, how would you describe affordable housing? I was born in the city, and I'm just curious like how you would define it, because it can be confusing.
Yeah. So for affordable housing, we normally just approach it from the same way that HUD approaches it, which is that no more than 30% of your income is going towards rent and utilities or a mortgage and utilities. Because to be clear, also folks who are homeowners can also be housing burdened when you are paying more than, in some cases, 50% of your income towards your housing expenses.
Thank you for that. I see we have another question up here.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. I'm Mark Plummer with the Bronner Group. And I just wanted to know, in light of the ever-changing federal landscape right now, how will the city distinguish its services between the Department of Housing and the Chicago Housing Authority?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So to be clear, we work very closely with our partners at the Chicago Housing Authority and continue to evolve our relationship and make sure that we're working even closer and deeper as time goes on. However, they are the place where you're going to get vouchers. They're the place where they are physically housing people in their public housing programs. And more importantly, all of that is coming from federal funding, which is also under threat. The Department of Housing, we're looking at a spectrum of programs outside of that. We're looking at homeownership programs. We are looking at initiatives, again, like Cut the Tape. And even our establishment of Green Social Housing and this Residential Investment Corporation is still done without federal funds, which really makes it the biggest distinction between us and CHA.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I already see a number of people, which is why we want to move to questions, because we have a lot of them. So thank you for that.
Hi, Jackie Gomez with Hacia. My question is, how do you, I see that there's a lot of correlation about affordability, but there's also the job situation, right? So you can't afford a house if you don't have gainful employment. How do you take that into account when you're looking at affordable housing, lease versus ownership? That's, to me, at Hacia, we do job training programs, and so we see that in order for them to be successful, you need to be able to earn an income. How are you working with that, and who are the stakeholders there that you have to involve?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question, because it allows me to tell everyone that for our 2024 numbers, for our participation for WBE and MBE, the city has a baseline of 26-6, so 26% minority business enterprise, 6% women-owned business enterprise, and the department's numbers were nearly twice that in both categories. And so we have actually done a lot of work to ensure, thank you. We've actually done a lot of work to ensure that there is also wealth creation happening through the job space. And so we know that currently the Department of Housing has about $1 billion in projects that are being monitored across all of our projects. All of those are opportunities to create jobs and to do wealth creation through that as well. So part of what we have continued to do, no matter what else is happening, we have continued our commitment to emerging general contractors, emerging developers, and ensuring that there are opportunities for small businesses to participate in the contracts that we are talking about. In addition to that, more specifically thinking about the question of homeownership versus rental, we believe, again, in choice. It's a spectrum. So all the way from being a renter or actually maybe being someone who is experiencing homelessness, all the way through homeownership, we want people to have all of those opportunities. And so we do work on development of affordable housing, affordable rental housing, but we also have down payment assistance programs for home ownership. We also have our Rebuild 2.0 program, which is taking vacant buildings and putting them back into good use in the community through small contractors, and again, for community members who are going to invest in the community as they take ownership of these buildings. And so, again, we take that seriously because we know that ultimately, with all the money that is being spent, we are an incredibly large job creator, and we want to make sure that that continues to be something that everyone has access to.
Thank you for that. And what an amazing thing to be doing, you know, affordable housing and creating jobs. We could all use that in the city. So please, a round of applause, please. Not to worry. We have actually a number of other questions. Next from the Illinois Realtors Association.
Hi, Commissioner. Adrienne Morawski. Thank you very much for being here. You mentioned ADUs. So first question is, what's the timeline on that? And then the second question is, what types of programs exist to protect property owners right now for people who own to keep them in their homes and or if they are a small landlord?
Yeah. So ADUs, there's not a timeline right now that we're necessarily working on. We just know that that continues to be one of the priorities that was laid out in Cut the Tape, and that we want to make sure that that continues to be a conversation that is ongoing with our legislative counterparts as well. In terms of protections for small landlords, part of the work that we do is that we also look at very low-income homeowners and try to help keep them in their homes through our home repair program. So currently in 2024, we served nearly 360 homeowners and helping them stay in their homes by making essential repairs like to roofs and porches. This year, part of what we have done is that we are including repairs for seniors specifically to be able to age in place into that same program. Again, as part of housing choice, we talk a lot about people's ability to age in place and make the best choice for themselves, not because they suddenly can't go up the stairs or can't climb in the bathtub anymore, but really where they have all of those things and can still say, I want to keep my home, or I want to sell my home, or I want to pass my home on to the next generation. And so we are continuing to look at all of those things. We are continuing to look at how else we can continue to support, in particular, landlords in 2 to 4 units, as that is a large part of the housing stock here in the city.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. We have a few more questions over here. Sir.
Yes. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Jonathan Buckner, Airbnb. In your presentation, you mentioned the effect of restrictive residential zones. Do you mind talking just a little bit more about the effect that those have?
Yeah, so I think just generally talking about zoning is one of the things that we do. I'm really fortunate to have a really great partner in progress. She coined that term, not me, Commissioner Boatwright at the Department of Planning and Development. And so in general, even when we're talking about ADUs, we're always talking about zoning and the ways in which zoning can help to push forward housing and in some of the ways in which it can sometimes be restrictive. And thinking through just what are the different ways in which we have to look at zoning and think about reforms to that as part of our broader strategy of building more homes.
Thank you. We had
Diane Hansen with Dreamtown. The City Council passed a new 606 pilot program to help a tenant buy the building they live in. Has even one tenant bought the property that they live in, whether it's commercial or residential? And if they have, was it commercial or residential, a 2 to 4 unit or 5+?
I would have to pull all the data specifically, but there is currently one purchase underway for a residential property. And so the 606, the so-called 606 ordinance, the Northwest Side Housing Preservation Ordinance, is one of the tools in the toolbox for us in ensuring that we are helping to preserve homes, particularly in areas where there is a lot of movement and a lot of folks who can no longer afford to stay.
Well, aren't you asking the broker to practice law without a license? Isn't that really what you're asking him to do? It's a lot of work for the real estate broker. And if only one of all the people who have had the opportunity to do it, does that justify the time invested in this?
So the Pilot has been only in place since March 1, so we're actually really excited that we've gotten as far as one person. And part of what we have done is that we have worked extensively with folks to ensure that we are putting rules out and that we're promulgating things out in public to ensure that we're helping people really make the best choices for themselves, and that includes the folks participating in that process. And so I think I would say that really, again, the ultimate goal in what we are doing is helping people be able to access opportunities for wealth building.
I'm sorry, we have to move on to our next question. Thank you, though.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. My name is Kimberly Jones, and I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Linda Black, and we are service providers for homeless youth in Chicago. And so you mentioned a couple times about the threats of federal funding, and I just want to know if you have any suggestions on how programs can sustain if there is a threat to our HUD funding.
Yeah, absolutely. I sit on the board of the Continuum of Care as part of my role. There's lots of ways in which we are deeply connected to the work that is happening in that homelessness space. Obviously, we work closely with the Chief Homelessness Officer, Sunny Soto. In addition, the department put aside $30 million to help 5 shelters turn their shelters from congregate settings to non-congregate settings. Again, going back to the basics around dignified housing and making sure that people have the space that they need. In general, I would say that I think that when it comes to funding, I'm really looking forward to what our partners in philanthropy will be doing. I think there's lots of initiatives like the Cut the Tape initiative for which we could not have done it without philanthropy. And I think that particularly in the space of housing and these other human services, it's going to be really important to see our partners in philanthropy continue to step up and help fill the gaps that might be created by what's happening at the federal level.
Thank you, Commissioner. Am I on this one now? Okay. So one of the things, I have followed you on LinkedIn, and thank you for connecting with me. I've really appreciated that. But in your subject line, you say housing is a human right.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful thing to say. And I think that underscores where you're taking policy here. If we're to fast forward a couple of years, how do we promulgate that more broadly in the city? I hope through events like this. But what are, where did that view come from? Because I saw it was initially the earliest sort of markings of that sort of viewpoint actually came from the United Nations back in 1948, right. But it's obviously grown. And having you take that belief, and I've seen a number of your colleagues in your department also share that belief. Mm-hmm. You look at it, because housing, it is the largest or most democratic way of wealth accumulation of anybody in this nation, and that's been recognized for the last, since the Housing Act of 37, right, that the nation wanted to allow the middle class and the working class to start to accumulate wealth, to start to accumulate a stake in society, and that's something we should all have the chance to do. So I want to say thank you for that, Commissioner, and offer my thanks and just a round of applause. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And with that, I want to say we will conclude these comments. I did want to give you a preview of a few other events we have coming in the coming weeks. One, we're going to – let me make sure I get the dates right. I don't want to misquote the dates. I usually try to have comments in my head rather than read. I'm not a great reader. So, on May the 28th, we have Commissioner Spiropoulos coming to speak from the Cook County Circuit Court. Anyone who knows Mariana, she is an amazing leader. Obviously, she did a lot of work with Met Water and now over with the county court, and so she's going to be sharing more about what they're doing there. June 11th, Chicago Prize. Have you guys heard about this? This is an amazing program thanks to the Pritzker Traubert Foundation, where $10 million is given to a community organization to go make substantive change in our community. We're going to hear from the 4 finalists on June 11th. I'm pretty sure those are going to sell out, so make sure that you get your tables and seats. And then finally, July 9th, we're going to talk about revitalizing historically disinvested communities, something that actually ties a lot to our conversation today. And we'll have both the United Way
as well as the CEO of BMO US to come here, Daryl Hackett, to come talk about that some more. And that's actually a topic I'm really excited about. I wrote my senior thesis in college on redlining, so I'm excited to hear what they have to say on that. So with that, I will say thank you to all. You. This meeting is adjourned. And thank Commissioner, another round of applause. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Omar.
A real pleasure. Thank you.